and morning show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, Kalish Forfar, and filling in for JD Bunkus one more day, Justin Cuthbert. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's going on?
I'm used to hearing...
Not hockey, that's what's going on.
No, there's no hockey. I'm used to hearing, like, the music coming in, and then Vic will put in, like, a press conference. Usually, like, it's a Keefe's voice, like, "Oh, the Toronto Maple Leafs won in a 3-2 comeback." And now it's just, like, intro music, us. There's nothing to play.
Yeah, I don't think you wanted to pull from Luke Tardif. Yeah,
no, none of him.
That's not exactly the sound. At least Luke Tardif doesn't want that sound used, I don't think.
The sound of him being shot to the moon by hockey fans everywhere. Good morning. It is Thursday morning. We're with you again today. Fan 590's The Fan Morning Show. Justin, this is your second day filling in for JD. We've had like a grand total of zero games. How are you finding the gig without games?
Bad luck.
Well, we had a game to talk about last night, right? Or the previous day. Sir. We had that 11-2 drubbing that somehow didn't cover the spread to talk about. That was the final day or the final game of the 2022 World Junior Championship, unfortunately. Yeah, it's a bit of a weird time. We're finding ways to still enjoy sports because it's still ongoing. But the one absence, the Leafs being off for so long, is so strange. I feel so disconnected from the team and what's going on. I think they had more added to the COVID list yesterday. Just an absolute disaster there. And I'm hoping, I'm praying, I've got all the digits I can cross, I have crossed that they'll play on January 1st. But I'm starting to feel less and less enthused or encouraged by that just because of the state we're in. I mean, losing the World Juniors was a big time blow for people that had, you know, that planned in their holiday schedule to watch those games and to fill the space here provided by the National Hockey League going, you know, quasi-dark.
So the World Juniors are canceled. The IIHF announced yesterday that due to 4 positive tests across the teams, that they just felt they couldn't go on. This has led to a lot of response on a lot of different sides. There's obviously, you know, concern for the players. There is disappointment that this holiday tradition and this kind of grand hockey tradition, we're losing it. There have been players and coaches from other countries, either publicly or through media members as sources, you know, ripping this setup pretty badly. Let's start with the fan side of this. And Ailish, these were, you know, I don't think last night was necessarily the game anyone was super locked into, Canada, Germany, but yesterday was supposed to be our best day of World Junior Hockey. And it was supposed to be 4 games of, you know, higher caliber. 3 of those games on paper were very, very good. And we don't get Friday night's big Canada Finland matchup plus the playoff round. How much does this sap your kind of half holiday week here? I don't know what you described the week between Christmas and New Year's as, but half holiday, no more World Juniors for it.
I describe this week as a blur. I don't even know what the days are. Just wake up. Am I working or not? But yeah, it was tough. I actually took a little snooze after the show so that I would be well energized to watch hours and hours of World Juniors, and woke up to the terrible news that it would be canceled. Yeah, it's the first feeling is disappointment. I remember I had told my parents, well, they were listening to the show, and they're like, "Well, today's supposed to be a good day to watch sports." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm just going to go rest up." And then, you know, obviously with the news coming out, it's really disappointing. I think it just, as we talked about yesterday, there's so much excitement to see new faces, to see those new rivalries, to get an opportunity to watch people at the biggest stage that they've ever been at so far. And some of these players will never get that opportunity again because they're either going to age out, or maybe this is the opportunity that they needed to prove themselves before a draft or for their teams to give them that opportunity in NHL. So there's just so much that is a missed opportunity just at the baseline of understanding that this tournament won't be played. And then there's like the human side of it. You feel for these teams that flew across the world, missed Christmas. They've been here for about a month. They had the idea that the IIHF was going to make things safe and structured this time around. And within 4 days, it's over. I just feel like that is a whole nother side of disappointment. So you have the fan disappointment, you have the athlete disappointment, and then as a female hockey player, you're like, we get a little bit of karma. Was that a little bit of karma happening? I mean, I'm not going to dance around on the grave of the IHF, but it just seemed, wow, can you have a worse week? I don't think that any organization has dealt with a worse week, and their PR was just real tough. So all in all, yesterday, bad day for hockey.
So, yeah, you mentioned these countries flying in over the last couple of weeks. And Scott Wheeler, who we had on yesterday to discuss the World Juniors, he had a piece up at The Athletic late last night, kind of going through all of this. And part of what he reminded us is that at the time that these countries were leaving Europe and the United States, heading into Edmonton, Omicron hadn't quite exploded just like this. It was kind of the 48 hours right before things took off. So maybe they get a little bit of plausible deniability on that front. But we've also had teams and players come out and say now, like, hey, the facilities that we were at weren't really isolated. We weren't bubbled. We were sharing a hotel room with weddings that, you know, it doesn't sound like it was. It basically, it sounds like the players and the teams tried to do their part as much as possible. And it was an infrastructural thing that led to this. Obviously, we can't trace it that exactly, but that seems to be the feeling among team officials.
So luckily, I can give you a very recent cross-reference of what it's like to be at an IHF tournament in a bubble. So I went to the Latvia World Championships in, I guess it was March or April or May. I don't even know at this point what month, but early in the spring. And I was a part of the exact same bubble that the players were in. So tier one bubble. And before I flew to Latvia, I had to quarantine for a week. And during that week, I had to take two PCR negative tests before I could go to the airport. I flew, I landed, I then quarantined for 5 days at the hotel that all the players were going to be in. I couldn't leave my room. And in that time, I had a PCR test almost every day. All of those were negative. Then I was able to leave my hotel room, and our hotel, which was the same hotel that players were in, was closed to everybody but the players and the tier one staff, which was me, because I was an IHF employee, yikes, officials and top level people. Like, that was it. The tournament was closed. You could not enter the building. You could not deliver food into the building. You had to drop everything off at the concierge. Every single morning when I woke up, I got a PCR nose swab right up into the brain. And every single player, every single person got a PCR nose swab to the brain. We took the same private shuttles to and from the arena, and you never left the arena or the hotel. At one point, I tried to stand outside the hotel to get fresh air, just like, you know, where there's like the roundabout. Wasn't even allowed to stand in the roundabout to get sunshine on my face or fresh air. You had to go straight from the hotel into the shuttle. So in my month of being there, I never saw the air, but I also never saw COVID. And it was the most structured bubble. It was so safe. Once you're in there, you felt like, we are never going to get COVID. Like, I don't know how it would infiltrate. And then even just to add to this, one of the games, they allowed fans in the round robin. They finally said, okay, we're going to allow fans. It was Latvia's home game. And they had an arena full of fans and nobody got COVID still. And so I just like the structure that they had in Latvia, the way it was taken so seriously, the lack of outside presence, it worked. It was a successful bubble, not a hitch, not a problem. I mean, although I was pale and didn't see the daylight and was losing my mind slowly, we were safe.
Yeah, well, you became a vampire instead of getting COVID, which when you're
completely a vampire,
those things, great.
I would rather
so
be.
Justin, I guess a kind of double-edged question for you here in that, why was the double IHF less strict this time around, and how big a black eye do you think this is for them?
Well, it all comes down to money like everything else, right? I mean, it's pretty clear that they failed to protect their investment by not employing the same standard that they had at last year's World Junior and at the double IHF World Championship that Eilish went to in Latvia. They made these decisions because they are trying to recoup losses from previous years or previous lost tournaments. And I think they just got a little bit complacent here. I think that hockey people in general have sort of, underestimated the impact of COVID this season. Like this is very, very true. It's both. And I think it's both like inexcusable that this has happened, but also understandable because as you mentioned, Blake, we didn't know exactly what we were facing, you know, a month ago, what we're facing now. We didn't know that Omicron would be spreading the way it has, but to prepare for this tournament with all this overlap with the general public was pretty foolish on their part. And they failed to protect their investment, which was to get themselves in a position to make a little bit more money, get fans in the building, get fans buying gear, get a little bit because you lost it last year. That's the only reason why Edmonton is hosting for the second year in a row, because they didn't make money last year. And this was the opportunity to make money. So in save or cost, trying to control costs this year, heading into the tournament, they lost everything that they could have made. Their earning potential was completely squashed based on the fact that they didn't put enough money into it in the first place. There was no bargaining to be had here. They didn't have to go through a CBA with the players. The players wanted to be here, wanted to travel during the holiday season, wanted to make these sacrifices to be in Edmonton. And they failed them. They failed the players and they failed themselves because they didn't put themselves in a position to protect their investment.
So just in case folks listening haven't really heard, apparently, and we'll maybe get confirmation from Chris at 7 or 8. God, I should always have this pulled up, but we're going to talk to the man who broke this story. But apparently they were sharing hotels with the general public. So like that is the biggest red flag when you look at how this didn't work out, is their general public coming in and out, sharing facilities, using the same elevators. Like, think about that being the biggest X in terms of planning. And apparently one of these hotels that were having a wedding, like a full wedding was happening. I mean, I always dreamed of having a wedding in Edmonton in the middle of winter at the Holiday Inn. So I'd like a hookup for that. But like, just look at the way that those tiny little errors, not even tiny, like having players sharing hotel rooms, which obviously is going to cause more opportunity for spread, and the general public using the same hotel rooms, hotel facilities like that. I know it's more expensive to rent out a hotel, but there's got to be more than one hotel in Edmonton. Like I've never been, but I assume that there was another alternative to just being like, here's a bubble, but we can still allow fans in. The fans won't interact with the players, but you guys just want to share facilities.
So yeah, the hotel in question was actually the one in Red Deer. It was the Cambridge Hotel.
Oh, in even Red better. Deer.
Yeah. So you know, I don't know if you have the budget for that one, but upgrade you. So obviously, there's a lot lost here. There's a lot lost from the fan perspective. There's something lost from the NHL scouting perspective. Even if we want to act like, you know, the larger sample wins out, I'm sure these, like March Madness, the memories from World Juniors kind of stand out as evaluators are splitting hairs between prospects. But it's really the players that I feel for the most. And I've gone back and forth on who this impacts more or who this sucks more for. And obviously it sucks for all of them. But, you know, on one end, there's a guy like Connor Bedard who is starting to build his legacy early, and a legacy that is potentially going to be a big one in Canadian hockey. We can look ahead to other events in the near future that maybe he's participating in for Canada. But he also has that 4-goal game potentially erased from the record. Not potentially, I think it's probably erased from the record books. But then you also have the guys a little lower on the depth chart who, you know, maybe this was their most prominent opportunity to represent Canada. And maybe those are guys who, you know, make the NHL but aren't on the Olympic radar or World Championship radar. Like, not every one of these guys becomes a top line forward or top pair defenseman. Ailish, I mean, you've gone through a tournament like this. To have that pulled out from you short notice, or in the middle of it, not even short notice, in the middle of it, how gutting it is it for these guys, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the worst for the players. Like, as much as I like to poke fun at how this blew up and, you know, oh, it was just a disaster waiting to happen, you have to feel just awful for the players who look towards this tournament, probably since they knew that they would even, you know, make it when they're 14, 13 years old and they're idolizing what's next in their hockey career. Like, a lot of guys think about the NHL, but this is the pinnacle of representing your country. As a female hockey player, you really only grew up wanting to play for Team Canada. Like, you're not thinking about, ooh, I can't wait to to play at my college for 4 years. Like, that's great. But you think about representing your country. I think it's pretty much the same for young guys now that want to play at the World Juniors. As I said, the biggest stage that you might ever get to be on. There's a lot of these guys that you look back at World Juniors rosters, they have this opportunity and then they maybe fizzle out. They're an AHL guy. They're up and down. They don't get that platform to play for a Stanley Cup. So this is like, this is their Stanley Cup. And you feel awful for the fact that that's a missed opportunity. When you talk about Bedard, like the fact that he got that 4-goal game, that was probably not going to go anywhere now or be counted if they redo, if they do play the tournament again, we're going to remember that. But like, technically it's not going to count and he can go out and get another 4-goal game, but we were all there in the moment watching it happen. And it was one of those history making moments. Twitter was electric. We came on the show the next day. We just couldn't stop like gushing about this kid. Think about what the rest of that tournament could have been like. The rivalry between him and Michkov in Russia, we could have seen that starting to develop. We miss a lot of storylines. So I feel the worst for the players. And I think that they're probably going to be very PR when they do speak out, or if they do, when they get back on social media. You know, obviously we're disappointed, whatever, but I think this one stings just so much, so much more for them.
Yeah. I mean, this is a bummer for everyone, but what's sort of interesting about how at least my mind works, I don't know if it's that interesting actually, but like we first go to Bedard and Owen Power and the Canadians, mm-hmm. but like this is worse for the 19-year-old German
yeah.
who this was going to be the highlight of his hockey life, right? And we mm-hmm. saw the German team taking photos and trying to enjoy what little moments they had left of being at this tournament before they went home and probably, you know, had to quarantine and do everything just to get back to their normal lives. For Connor Bedard, for Owen Power, yeah, like for Owen Power, it sucks because I think part of the reason why he is at this tournament or didn't go to the NHL is because of this tournament. He wanted to mm-hmm. have this opportunity, but he didn't have last year. I don't think he was allowed to go by right. the Michigan program or something
correct.
Of that nature. But like Connor Bedard, again, our mind goes there, but he's going to have so many opportunities. He probably has next year. He might have this summer if they do reschedule it. My mind was thinking, hey, send this guy to Beijing. I mean,
did I not tweet
this could
that
be
night
for
one?
Him to, he could be the 13th forward.
I wasn't
there
even kidding.
Probably get into the lineup there. So I feel like that might be a thing. That might be an opportunity for Owen Power. I think that makes sense if he's allowed to do that. I don't know how this is all going to work. But I am pretty encouraged at the idea or at least pleased to see, although there is the important context of them not doing it for the women's side, but it looks like they're going to get this tournament played at some point. And we're going to have to ask Chris Peters exactly what that means, whether the same teams can go, whether they can pick up where they left off. But I will leave my point at this. They're going to keep that Connor Bedard game in the record books. They're not going to let that go because they're going to want to talk about it. So there's going to be some sort of amendment where it was like, yes, this happened. It's like a bizarro world where Connor Bedard did score 4 goals, did put his name beside Gretzky, and then the official 2022 tournament will be played at some point. And I think he'll hold on to that record just because I think certain networks will probably like tell that story.
He definitely ends up as one of the top forwards of the tournament, probably on that the MVP of the tournament after 2 games. So they should award.
Sure.
They should award
and
the awards.
And Blake's bet may or may not cash.
That's right.
Yeah, Cole Perfetti, top point getter in the tournament. No, that's firmly voided. Do you guys have anything else on this, or do we want to shift to something a little more positive for the rest of the hour here?
Well, we get to circle back with Chris Peters at 8 mm-hmm. o'clock to talk
yeah,
about it and get more information.
We sort of touched on it a little bit, but it was very, you know, the culmination of what was a terrible week for Luke Tardif, a terrible first couple of months on the job. Just that he was so eager to reschedule the men's junior tournament mm-hmm. and that he owed it to them to do everything that he could to get those games played when he just canceled everything else as soon as possible.
That stuck in my craw.
He showed himself and he, you know, we have things lodged in our craw.
Oh, it's stuck in there. And I will not take it out of my craw until they also reschedule the women's worlds and not just cancel it. So I think he has an opportunity, though, I'll say. Now, like this blessing in disguise, possibly, that both of these big, all of these big tournaments were ended up being canceled. If they can find a way to make them work within the year, and he said that that's his goal, then he has a little bit a little bit, he could bump up my levels of respect here.
They know exactly what to do. Set up sanitary confines at a hotel in Edmonton or somewhere.
Just go
get
to Latvia.
All the teams there. You could exactly go to Latvia. It's a proven concept. You can get multiple iterations of the same tournament there and get some championships played. Men, women, juniors, seniors, everybody should have the opportunity if Luke Tardif is doing his job correctly.
So you might say that the bold prediction from the two of you for 2022 is that Luke Tardif gets his act together and we get some of these tournaments. Let's spin it a little more positive. Maybe it's not positive. Maybe your bold predictions for 2022 are negative, which who could blame you the way the last 2 years went. But it is December 30th. We're going to do a lot of year-end stuff with JD when he's back tomorrow. But throughout the day today, one thing we're going to come back to is bold predictions for the Toronto teams for the year ahead, 2022. So send us your text, 590, 590. We'll be checking those throughout the show. We're also going to talk a little bit later about how we changed the most as a sports fan in 2021. And that could be, you know, I don't mean that as some like high-minded philosophical shift necessarily, but maybe you started gambling more. Maybe you started gambling less. Maybe you took on a new sport or a new team. Maybe you had a new fantasy baseball approach that led to a championship. Whatever changed about you as a sports fan in 2021, we want to hear about that throughout the day today and maybe a little bit tomorrow. So keep those texts coming in at 590, 590. Right now, though, we're not going texts. We're going to you guys. We want some bold predictions for Toronto teams or athletes in the year ahead. The last 2 years have not been the rosiest. And I'm not going to tell you guys how to do your content here, but I think the people could probably use a little bit of positivity here. So Ailish, you are generally, to use Caleb Joseph's term, the vibes coordinator. So I'm going to go to you first, hoping that this is a positive one. Give us a bold prediction for 2022.
Okay, well, we'll stick with Caleb Joseph's sport, which is baseball. And I'm going all in on the Blue Jays. I have like three or four bold predictions for them that I could group into one, but I think by the start of next season or within next season, the Blue Jays will make another major signing or trade that puts them immediately in the World Series favorites. Someone like a Freddie Freeman, a Chris Bryant. I think that they're going to find a way to go all in. I think it was close before the shutdown is happening right now. There was rumblings. I think that they're not done. I could continue with my Blue Jays picks or just give you that one and move on.
Well, I think I know where you're going with it. You take the team they currently have, the momentum they currently have, you look at the budget they have left, you throw in a Chris Bryant or a Freddie Freeman or a, hey, I gave them Jose Ramirez as a Christmas gift last week. I think I can guess what your next bold prediction is. The Jays are making a deep run. How deep is that run going, Ailish?
I think that they're going to make it to the World Series, and that's where I'll leave that conversation. I don't want to jinx anybody.
Justin, you have a thought on that? Are we overcorrecting here with a bad end of 2021 and getting too spicy for 2022?
I mean, I think this is a good way to start here. I think we wanted positivity off the bat. I think there may be some negative predictions as we go through all the Toronto teams. But I think, I was toying with the idea of the division and you know, maybe the World Series is a bit of a stretch. But if they're in the playoffs, they're certainly going to have that opportunity. I mean, it's expanded a little bit. But if they're a division winner, they're going to be a team that is reckoned with in the postseason next year. And I do expect them to be there. I went a little bit more granular. I was talking about or thinking about, how many home runs is Vladimir Guerrero going to hit? Could he hit 60 home runs? I'm talking about Austin Matthews, 60 goals, maybe 60 home runs, and getting into that elite club is a possibility for Guerrero, who had 48 and was clearly the best home run hitter in the game. But I went with, and this is important if they're going to make any World Series run, that Alek Manoah is the team's best pitcher next year. I think this might be a little bit of hopeful thinking because I'm a big fan, and it's not necessarily a bad thing that I think Manoah might be their best pitcher, because I think Barrios and Gausman are going to be very, very good. But I think Manoah has that potential to just be a rock star for the Blue Jays next year. And if they're going to win a division, if they're going to go to a World Series, having him as a potential outlier in terms of like what he can provide, if he is a superstar next year, if he does take a step forward after his, I guess it was rookie season, they could just be completely, completely dominant. So my hopeful wish is that Manoah is their best pitcher and he leads what is a tremendous pitching staff boosted by Kevin Gausman. And the Blue Jays do accomplish some of those things because of what Manoah provides.
I would like to also add on to our bold predictions that for this to all happen, I think the Blue Jays will have another player in top three MVP voting and another player in top three Cy Young voting. Okay.
I think you assume that that's Vlad on the MVP side?
Yes. But I also think that I'm leaving room for other players to have outstanding seasons. And I thought you were going to go this way, Cuthbert, when you started to talk about Vladdy, but I could see Vladdy winning a batting title.
Yeah, he was flirting with the triple crown for a good chunk of this year. He ended up hitting 311.
I'm just going all in on the Jays this year. This is a year.
All right, I'll do one micro Jays one just to keep it on Jays before we take a break and get to the A-list here. I know there's been a lot of talk about, hey, what asset do you have to give up if you trade for Jose Ramirez or if you trade for whoever, a pitcher from the Marlins, depth, anything like that. I don't think the Jays trade their top prospect. In fact, I think Gabby Moreno is on the roster at some point in 2022. That bat plays at such a ridiculous level already. The reports on the glove are very good. If you are going to maximize this window with Vlad and Bo and Teo before they get super expensive, and if you want to focus the money that you have on the starting rotation, you've got to get inexpensive contributions elsewhere. And as much as the MLB labor system sucks, that comes in the form of guys performing on rookie deals. I'm not a baseball scout enough to know if Gabby Moreno's ready yet, but statistically, he's if he starts AAA hot, and Danny Jansen isn't quite the pull-hitting, power-hitting Danny Jansen we saw in the second half, and they still don't trust Alejandro Kirk to be a regular behind the plate, I think there's a path for Moreno there. He strikes me as the type of prospect at a position of premium value where once you start knocking on that door, you don't keep him down there too long past the Super 2 deadline if things are going well at AAA. So maybe he's like a little boost to your playoff run as well. No, we're not talking MVP or Cy Young. We're talking about, you know how I've been Ailish with all the Jays roster stuff. It's like, yeah. Getting good guys at the top is cool, but just like give me the absence of bad players playing all the time. Give me 123 fewer Joe Panic plate appearances. Those are the things that I want to fix. So there you go. Ailish has an MVP candidate, a Cy Young candidate, a big free agent addition, and a World Series appearance for the Jays.
Ailish has a lot.
Well, they're all going to lead into each other. You can't have one and then not true. Do
that's
well.
True. That's true. Yeah.
Justin Cuthbert is teased a Vlad 60 home run and then went with the Alek Manoah monster year. I'm saying Gabby Moreno cracks the roster at some point. Good way to start. Jays, very positive. Little later in the show, we'll get to some Leafs ones, some Raptors ones, maybe some Canadian sports ones. Send us yours at 590-590. We'll check in on them throughout the show. And maybe a little bit in the next segment, depending on how much good stuff we have for the A-list, which...
Not much.
I don't know. Given how I felt reading the news last night, I think it might be a brief A-list, but I'll leave that to you. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.
You had to hear it one more time. That's the Team Canada goal song at the World Juniors. It has been for a few years now, but we will not be hearing it any longer this year. So a little bit of nostalgia already. We heard it enough, though, in the first two games. They definitely got the play of Hey Baby. But that's it. Hey Baby is no longer. Sorry about that.
That was, for a moment there, the most Fan Morning Show thing I've ever seen, with Ailish dancing enthusiastically to Hey Baby as we come back to break and Blake head down in the notes, making sure to be as prepared.
Blake was
as possible
calculating
and missing
how many
dancing.
Times they say Hey Baby with his little calculator.
Yeah, music analytics. No, I was trying to see what the spike was in Spotify play and Apple Music downloads after each Connor Bedard goal. And if it was getting up and up and up, like each Connor Bedard goal, people were getting more and more into the song, or if the Canadian market tuned that song out entirely. It was like, okay, Connor, we get it. You love this song. You don't need to play it. You know, that's the worst. Connor Bedard, the worst aux cord guy, just playing the first 15 seconds of a song over and over again, or, you know, just going back to the course of out here grinding over and over again at practice.
Oh, man. But yep, that was, that's it. If you have missed the news, no more World Juniors. I don't know where you were if you missed the news. Wakey, wakey. We talked about that at the top of the hour. We'll touch back on it at 8 o'clock. And one thing we want to hear from you throughout the day, it's Text Line Thursday, we're going to call it, because we didn't have Text Line Tuesday this week. So Text Line Thursday, we have a couple things. We talked about bold predictions for Toronto teams or athletes. So if you have anything you think is going to happen in 2022, put it down in writing, because how are we going to circle back to you and say you were right? We need to see it. We need to speak it into existence. So text those in, 590-590. And then after the break into the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about your biggest change as a sports fan in 2021. So if you have ideas for that, whether it's you became a degenerate gambler like myself, you started repping a new team, et cetera, send those in. We'll get to them throughout the show. And now we're going to get to the A-list.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong. What's up, baby?
Oh, it's so good. Just a shout out to whoever does our social media posts. Also, I think I heard we are maybe getting a new person. I don't know if they've already started or not. But today's tweet, Bing Bong, Get Up With The Fan Morning Show. Yeah, you had me at Bing Bong. If our listenership is even higher today, that's why.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good time to Bing Bong, given the Knicks came through in the wake and rake last night. We'll talk about that at 8:30, because there are some real statistical anomalies in that game. Julius Randle did his best to sink me, but, you know, I'm not crazy hot overall lately, but when it comes to the picks for that thing, I'm untouchable lately, so we'll see how that continues. Bing Bong.
It did hit two-part of our three-part parlay, because mine technically was eliminated. We'll get into that. Who do I want to give some love to on the A-list today? How about Shea, our boy Shea, rocking the 2014 Winter Classic Leafs Phil Kessel jersey, heading up to his game last night. There's a photo, obviously, I cannot show you while you're driving, viewers or listeners. It's great. So that led me to wondering what the weirdest jersey you guys have in your closet is. Weirdest or most random? Like, the fact that it's a 2014 Phil Kessel Winter Classic jersey is a bit strange. He doesn't have like a Matthews regular season jersey. So what do you guys have for random jerseys that you own?
So I mentioned one yesterday. I have a St. John's Ice Cap jersey.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I also have a Pup the Band Scorpion Hill Hockey Club jersey that is a little random. But no, I used to have more random ones. Like at one point I had an Eric Hinsky jersey, which has got to be like up there for most embarrassing Blue Jays you could have a jersey of. Probably the one that stands out now is I have a Joffrey Lavernier Oklahoma City Thunder jersey.
Wow.
Joffrey Lavernier, no longer in the NBA, never a particularly notable player, but that was a gift from our pal and producer of the Raptor show with William Liu, Alex Wong, because he thought I looked a lot like Joffrey Lavernier, who's a bearded white guy with tattoo sleeves. And
I thought you were going to say Joffrey Lupul.
No, he called in a favor with OKC. So I now have a Joffrey Lavernier jersey, rocking that 200 career NBA games and 5 points a game, representing that.
Kath, what about you?
I'm not really jersey guy. I don't have too many. I will say that shade, like you mentioned, it could have been Matthews. I mean, that is a beautiful jersey. I forgot how good those jerseys were for the Winter Classic. So I think he nailed that. I've got like a random assortment of like European soccer clubs that are just way in the past. Like obviously they have their advertisement on the front, and you can find some like relics in my closet, because that used to be a thing. Like my mom and dad would go to Europe every now and then, and that was the thing they'd get me, was a soccer jersey. when I was That's a kid. Cool. So I got a few of those, but I will throw my mother under the bus for a second because they recently moved within the last 5 years or so. And I had a closet that did have some decent jerseys. Like I had a old Michael Vick and I think every kid had a Tennessee Titans jersey for some reason. So I had a couple decent ones, but the one that I did want preserved was a Barcelona jersey. David Villa, no, David Villa hasn't really aged that well. But when I went in Barcelona, I bought a jersey there and it ended up in my parents at my parents' house in my old closet. And I guess it fell off a hanger at some point. And when they moved, they basically anything that was on the ground was thrown out. Anything that was hung up, they preserved. So the only thing that I really wanted preserved was that jersey, which happened to fall on the ground. And my 80 euros or whatever it was wasted. Sorry, Mom, I had to bring it up.
She's probably listening and I'm going to find it for you, honey.
How old do you think his mom is?
That's just the voice they use for moms. okay, we've already got text coming in about this, so keep it up. Blake, you got another one?
Well, no, I just have a question for you. So the Thunder were playing at the Phoenix Suns last night. Do you think that was an intentional, hey, we're in Arizona, I'm going to rep Kessel, or did it just randomly happen that
way? Oh, I didn't get
that.
That's great thinking. I didn't even clue into where they were playing.
That's second-level swag.
Why wouldn't he wear a Matthews one?
Shea knows.
Why wouldn't he wear a Matthews
one? Kessel's there. Because a Matthews one is, like, expected, right? Like, a Matthews one is the one that, like, a Raptor wears when you're trying to cross-promote both teams being in the playoffs. Shea is all about vintage. Like, so much of his style is vintage. And I know 2014 for us maybe doesn't feel vintage, but for Shea, it probably does feel vintage.
Well, then I will give him even more credit because I think that you're right. I think that was a calculated move.
Yeah, I think so. Do you have any Ailish?
I used to play for this team that no longer exists called the Markham Thunder in this league that no longer exists. So that is the most vintage jersey. You cannot buy it anywhere else. A 4FAR Markham Thunder 11 jersey. Very rare, very hard to get your hands on. Priceless. Priceless piece.
How many 4FAR jerseys do you have hung up in the
closet? So actually my mom, when I went to Dartmouth, she made me a hockey jersey quilt blanket. So all of my old jerseys from Timbits to up until I was, I guess, 18 going to college, she took all the jerseys and made this giant jersey quilt. So like the front emblems, the crest, and then the back with 4FAR and whatever number. And she like made this beautiful double-sided quilt. So all those jerseys that were just like in a bag or like in a smelly hockey container in the garage were all made into a really nice jersey quilt, which is so special. And I cherish that. It's really, we have it here actually, I think at this house that I'm at now. So she did a really good job with that because what else are you going to do with your jerseys? Like, I'm not going to hang up my, I don't know, AAA York Central Express jersey from Adam. But it's cool to be a part of the quilt. So I don't know how many I have just like laying around. More of my most recent ones, like I have my Team Canada one, my Markham Thunder one, and one of my Dartmouth ones, they actually frame for you when you graduate. So like I don't even have that I can wear. So I don't really have many like physical ones that are in wearable condition.
Well, that quilt idea is adorable. And you say lots of stuff that makes your mom sound really cute, but that might be top of the list.
She used to make it for like some of my friends and like other teammates that wanted it. Like she just like their parents would bring a bag of jerseys over and she'd make them a quilt and it'd be like a surprise for their birthday or Christmas. Yeah, she's a mastermind, that woman.
Probably not an option with my old jerseys based on smell.
She definitely had to wash it a few times.
There's
some
stuff.
Stink you can't get rid of, and I feel like my hockey jerseys passed the threshold. Back in the day,
probably.
I'm going to get
anything else make the A-list?
Yeah. Well, I want to get to these three texts about jerseys while we're at it. So no, it's okay. Keep them coming. So Kevin from Scarborough says, I have a random Paul Stastny home Avs jersey and a John LeClair home Flyers jersey.
Okay. Well, I don't think a John LeClair one qualifies as all that random. That Legion of Doom line when I was a kid, like I was a temporary, like the Flyers became my number two team because I was so obsessed with that Lindros LeClair Renberg line. So that's just a good jersey. Stastny one is a little more off board, but
yeah, it might be slightly random in that the Legion of Doom, I feel like John LeClair was the least interesting member of that line. Maybe I'm wrong, but There's got to be a reason why you went Leclerc over Lindros, no?
Well, it's probably to just be like counterculture,
a little
right?
different.
Everyone gets a Lindros jersey. I'm going to get a John Leclerc one, you know. Good for him.
Paul from Wasaga Beach. Oakland Raiders Warren Sapp jersey. I'm a Cowboys fan. LOL.
Yeah.
That's strange. I like it. And then this person didn't sign their name, so thanks to nobody. I have a Manny Ramirez Dodgers jersey for some reason. Not a fan of his. Not a fan of the Dodgers, but it's in my closet.
Yeah,
I wonder how people collect these things.
We mentioned Alex Wong and Coachella. I mean, you could rock a Dodgers jersey middle of summer. 99 with Ramirez on the back. It's
the Dodgers
stylin',
jersey's clean all the time. Yeah, whoever that is, if you don't want that thing,
send it in.
You know where to find it. A Manny jersey's great.
That's it so far in the text line. Keep them coming. All right. One other thing that made my A-list, which is a bit of a crazy story. You're going to stick with me. I'm going to read it out. It's a bit of a thread on Twitter, but we all know the Marlowe family, who are just fan favorites, class acts. Christina Marlowe, who's the only one that has Twitter, because we know Patrick Marlowe doesn't have Twitter. She tweets through him. She tweeted out a thread yesterday, and I'll read it to you. Our son was almost kidnapped tonight, and I need to thank the Headlam family in Louisiana. The mom, Jessica, and the dad saved Brody, who's their son, from a couple who was following him. Brody had gone down to the hotel pool to grab his sunglasses he had forgot. A woman started to follow him around, asking him questions, getting closer and closer. As soon as she started reaching out for him, trying to get him to go with her and her partner, another family saw this happening and saved him. I owe them a thank you I cannot even describe. Headlam family, thank you. You are angels on earth, and for the scum of the earth that think they can prey on children, there's a special place in hell for you. There are good people who will stop you. When Brody called, we rushed down to him. When I saw the woman who tried to grab him at the bar, I let her know that the cops had been called. Hotel security was watching her and she needed to leave. Mrs. Headlam already grabbed security as well. And I guess she just goes on in a couple of responses to people that they notified the cops and hotel security. And it doesn't seem like there's an update into like if that couple was arrested or not, but just a crazy, crazy story that she decided to share on Twitter. And obviously we are happy that there's a happy ending to that, but wow, just really spooky if you ask me.
Yeah, that's pretty messed up. I'm very glad that one had a happy ending, because I know JD teases you, A-list, that sometimes the A-list takes a dark turn. And that was when you first started saying that one, I was like, uh-oh. But no, glad it had a happy ending. Glad there are good
Samaritans
out there.
I would not put that on the radio. Here's a terrible end to this family that got their child abducted. Haha, that's on the A-list.
I mean, you've put some stuff like that on the A-list before.
No way.
But no, it's a nice reminder that A, there are good Samaritans out there, and B, you can't always assume that someone else is going to do something. So, you know, don't do that thing where I forget the name of the theory, but like if one person sees something, they do something. But if one person sees 10 other people seeing something, nobody does anything because they assume someone else will. You know, you can step in and do that. Good for them.
Where did you say this was?
Christina Marlowe's Twitter feed. And she said they were in Louisiana, which is strange.
Yeah, I was like, why are the Marlowe's in Louisiana?
Anyway, that's the life of.
I mean, I'm glad it's
soon to be retired.
A positive spin on that. It's strange little story, but shout out to the Marlowe's.
Shout out to the Marlowe's. Love them. I actually do have one of my strange jerseys. Is a Marlowe St. Pat's, the St. Patrick Day jersey. I was so excited to buy it the year that he was still on. Well, he's on the Leafs, and now it is no longer relevant, but I will still wear it with pride because he is still one of my favorite guys, you know?
Still a beautiful jersey.
It
you should wear it more
stunning.
Often.
It should be in their rotation more often. That's something that we want for 2022, a bold prediction, perhaps.
Good segue.
We were talking about bold predictions before the A-list, and we kind of boosted the tires of the Toronto Blue Jays. We think that they're going to just break every single record next year. Why don't we move to the Leafs since we're talking about hockey? What are some of your guys' bold predictions for the Leafs in the 2022 season? We'll start with you, Cuth.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like unanimously we're all very all very positive about the Blue Jays, and I think that's probably expected. I think there's a lot of excitement about what they are building and what could be, and I think there should be excitement about what the Leafs are building as well. Obviously, we're sort of conditioned here to be a little less optimistic, a little pessimistic, and concerned about what might lie ahead and what was sort of advertised as a regular season that really didn't mean anything at all. But I have a feeling that it's going to be different this summer. I think this past summer, Leaf fans were sort of embarrassed being Leaf fans. That loss to the Montreal Canadiens, that 3-1 collapse, a different 3-1, I guess it was 4-1 before, but the 3-1 might have been worse. But I feel like Leaf fans, my prediction is that Leaf fans will be happy to be Leaf fans this summer. I don't know exactly what that means.
Come on, give us more.
I think it probably requires that they win a round, but I feel like people are just going to set down their pitchforks and torches because they're going to have a reason to do so. I think they're going to avoid the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round. I think they either get Boston or Florida in that opening round. And I think if they can get past that, it could open up for them after that. I don't want to get too ahead of myself because I feel like I've written the same story over and over and over again in April, because this team continues to do the same thing. And I don't want to write that story again. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you.
I don't blame you.
But I think they're going to find a way to get through that first round. And if they do that, I feel like it'll be an okay summer for Leaf fans. So I'm predicting just, you know, a little bit more happiness, a little bit more confidence, a little bit more assuredness. Just Leaf fans being happy to be Leaf fans again this summer after what was, in some way, a successful postseason.
I won't say that Leaf fans will be happy with one playoff series win. I think they're going to make it to the conference final at a minimum, okay? I'm going to stick it now in the dirt and say that they're not just going to win one round and buzz off. And I will not be happy if that's the case. I will say, well, what was the point? So conference final, book it. That's my bold prediction.
I like that Cuthbert's prediction is basically Leafs fans become entirely different people. And an entirely different fan base.
Well, that's never going to happen.
I think one playoff round will do tremendous things to Leaf Nation as a whole.
I'm going to go a little more granular again and stay on the kind of playoff results and the fan reaction to it. But I'm going to split the difference between the two of you here. I think that Mitch Marner will have a very good first round of the playoffs. The Leafs will move on, but at some point in the playoffs, Mitch Marner will have another moment or a bad stretch of two or three games where the conversation about him is never going to change, and it's the exact same over and over again, even though at that point, look, this isn't even a bold prediction. This is just like what it is and what it's always going to be. I think Mitch Marner comes through in the playoffs, but the conversation doesn't catch up to that right away because the Leafs don't win the cup.
Okay, well, I hate that because you just like mushed it to happen or whatever we use that term for.
Well, if I mushed it to happen, then that means it's a good thing because it means
well, maybe you did.
People will be happy.
Regardless, that sucks for Mitch Marner. I think we just got to lay off that poor kid. If he has one good thing.
I was just going to say, this is the thing about Mitch Marner is we expect, even if he has a good first round,
that something bad will happen.
Have all the difference in the world for this team, right? Mm. We expect if he comes through that the results follow. And then the flip side is we expect him to maybe disappear again. And that will have, in turn, that devastating impact on the result. I think that's why right there, a snapshot of why he's such a polarizing figure is that he means so much to the success of this team. And when he was playing well earlier in his career in the playoffs, it didn't mean much, but it did get the Leafs knocking on the door of moving past the Boston Bruins. But when he did disappear, I guess, in recent playoff games at least, it had a devastating impact on this team. And that's really the Mitch Marner conundrum in a nutshell.
You know what type of players have the ability to impact games in both directions like that? Star players. It's a belief in Mitch Marner being a very, very good player that he can swing things like that. Mostly I'm talking about the discussion here. Like, I think he's going to have a good playoffs. I think he's going to have a good first round. I just don't think the conversation is going to catch up on it because unless they win the cup, next summer we'll be back to, is the cap sheet manageable? Who's the odd man out? Marner's the one without the no movement or whatever, we'll just be right back where we started with slightly different stats behind it.
Maybe a bold prediction is he's traded. Bum, bum, bum.
Dun, dun, dun.
That took a turn.
Send in your texts if you think that you have a bold prediction for any of the Toronto teams or players. We'll be getting to them. I see about 45 texts about jerseys. I'll try to cycle through them sometime in the show. Keep them coming. And after the break, we're going to keep going into what your biggest change as a sports fan was in 2021 and maybe circle back at some of these bold predictions. And yeah, we'll just keep the text line Thursday going. That's after the break. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.